Chapter 9, Number 1 Interlude. She didn't actually want to work with Chris Pike. He'd written a dissertation and was clearly in love with the subject matter, the exo and brief captain of the Kelvin, George Kirk. She'd read the dissertation and gone to a lot of the hearings and was pretty sure that Chris Pike was going to fail out of Starfleet at the last minute and run off to try and convince Winona Kirk to let him raise her babies. The whole Kelvin thing had been interesting to watch, from a bureaucratic point of view. Once you got past the fact that people they'd all known, or known of, were dead, it was kind of fascinating to see how Starfleet tried to find the most expedient, convenient theory. If she'd known him better, she would have seen that the face Pike had made when the official line was space anomaly meant that he was going to be a pain in the ass from that point out. As it was, she'd just chalked it up to a bitch face and gone about her life. She hadn't seen him for another 5 years, and barely recognized his name when she got assigned to his second tour as a captain of his own vessel, which was a fucking shit show. The CMO didn't stay in sick bay, everyone seemed to be a functional alcoholic, and Pike was weirdly, bizarrely, puritanical while still managing to fuck everything capable of enthusiastic consent. The first 2 months had been fucking terrible. It got better after that because she lost her temper and punched him in the head and submitted her application for transfer. When he'd regained consciousness, he had overridden the controls to her room, and they'd yelled at each other for hours, and nothing had been resolved until the next mission, when he'd been kicked by aliens who wanted him to mate with some woman as though they were an endangered species. She had clenched her teeth together. Humans weren't an endangered fucking species. Not like her own people. And they'd asked her if she wanted him, wanted to fuck him, and she had stared at them, incredulous, because this was a species meant to be highly advanced, and all they wanted was porn? It was possible to say she lost her shit. Later, after the firefight, but before they got beamed back up, he pressed gauze against her thigh, eyebrows knit together. I know you're not happy here, but... If I was going to enter into the world of adult entertainment, she mused, because she wasn't having this conversation. There were too many feelings in this conversation. I think I would be a very expensive porn star. He stared at her, and she lifted her eyebrows back and said, "Do you really want to be an Orion slaver?" He blushed a brilliant, brilliant red and covered his face with his hands, which were smeared with her blood. "Because I get it if it's a fantasy. Your kinks aren't your politics, you know. But if that is your politics, we're going to have a lot of issues. The last 5 months are going to look like a cakewalk, okay?" "Jesus, Number One!" he shouted, mortified. It's a kink, okay?" "Sure," she agreed, leaning back and closing her eyes. They'd saved the day, and soon the ship would beam them back up, and maybe they could make this whole thing work. "It's cool. Sometimes I get off to the idea of getting gang raped. Dicks everywhere, you know, and nothing you can do about it but take it." He made a brilliant choking noise, and she patted his hand soothingly, weirdly prudish. After that, she figures they bonded over terrible sexual fantasies and lines of professionalism being crossed. The thing about Jim Kirk is, she gets it. She gets what it's like to feel being seen as a dangerous thing. She gets that despite what the Vulcan kid thinks he understands. He has no idea what it's like to feel like every single person in your life has the potential to turn into a hostile. No fucking idea. She gets it. She's the queen of getting it. She survived Illyria. She and Chris Pike still fight about how she's one person in private and another person in public, and how he gets whiplash between the two of them. He gets now that it's born of survival technique, and he tries to be understanding of it, but sometimes he loses his shit, and she has to beat his fucking head in. That said, when the Vulcan kid browbeat Chris into an adoption, and she had laughed herself sick about that, Chris had wandered around his house aimlessly while she sat on the stairs drinking a beer. "Winona Kirk's kid won. The hell am I going to do? Do you remember Winona Kirk?" he asked, and she sighs and goes to the hardware store down the street and installs a doorknob that locks on the inside. Then she melts down the keys and puts it under the kid's pillow, because clearly she's going soft. "I'm not going to," Chris says, awkward and shifting his weight back and forth, the way he does when he's on the bridge, and knows she's about to throw down some actual bullshit command he's going to make. Seriously, they need a less Terran-driven model at the Academy, because fucking Terrans. But she gets it, kind of, the implicit accusation that he would do something if not for the door. But she thinks that Chris gets that as well as anyone who grew up in a functional home can, because he sees the scars of it on her. Everyone needs an anchor, and it's supposed to be parent, but some of them don't have that luxury. Chris is her person. She's still not 100% on how that happened, but he is. Spock is Jim's, and she can come over and hide when her apartment feels too big and empty, and she thinks she can hear footsteps or a transporter hum. When her nightmares feel the shadows and there's nowhere to run but away, she can do that because her person is less than a mile away, and she can run there if she needs to. Needs to, wants to, is hiding from the person in her bed who she has no real memory of except nice teeth. This is one of those scenarios where actions are going to speak louder than words, she says, and then makes him take her out to dinner at one of those food truck things, where he complains about all the illnesses they're inevitably going to get. Spock is going back to Vulcan. Anyone with eyes can see that Ambassador Sarek and Dr. Grayson are only staying because Jim's been abused, and because they're not convinced that if they left now, their son wouldn't find a way to escape. For a while, Spock will stay, and Jim will have his anchor and feel like the world is something that can be managed. But then Spock will leave, and so this place will have to be sufficient. And they have a lot, a fucking lot, of conversations about how Chris isn't being blamed for whatever has happened in Jim's life, but that he is going to be guilty until proven innocent. He's going to have to prove he won't hit the kid, that he won't ignore him or scream at him or blame him for things that a child has no control over. She has to tell stories she hasn't even thought of in a long time, and Chris gets that gut-punched look he gets, sometimes, when he realizes how bad it was in Illyria. It's gut-punched and laced with murder, which is why she likes him, because Chris Pike is a good, steady man, but then sometimes he's really not. It's going to be a shit show, she says, watching Jim Kirk struggle in his sleep in the hospital. Spock reaches out and presses a hand over Jim's, dark green bruises under his eyes. Yeah, you're fucking moving in, he replies. And fine. That seems fair-ish. She doesn't move in. Not any more than she already is. The ship is going down. She's going to run out of breathable air, and her corpse is going to float, bumping off of walls and ceilings until the ship explodes or something intercepts it. This is such bullshit. Were you an actress or something on Illyria? Jim asks, side-eyeing her. She glances over him, and he shuts off the game. Someday she'll tell him about it, when he's ready to ask. He started to, a couple of times, but kids like them recognize their own, and it's hard to take on someone else's hurt when you're only just coping with your own. Don't answer that, Chris calls from the kitchen. Not professionally, she says, grinning at Jim with too many teeth. Jim rolls her eyes at her, jumping over the back of the couch. She follows by going around, mostly because once a 16-year-old boy has done something, it's no longer satisfying. What's dinner? He asks. Stir fry, Chris decides, pulling his head out of the refrigerator. She smiles and rolls his eyes at her. His ass is really nice in those jeans, and he knows it. Grab a knife, kid. It's been about 2 years and change. Jim is 16 now, almost as tall as Chris, and grown into the sharp lines of his jaw. His lips are still too big, and his hair is, frankly, a disaster, but he shares space easily enough. Not like he has something to prove. Crystal has a policy of letting Jim come to him, rather than reaching out for affection, and the locked door still hurt, sometimes, but now he understands not to take it personally. Jim is at the top of his class in spite of himself, and sometimes catches himself talking about the ethics of deep space exploration. He pulls amazing faces and then hides in his room, probably sexting his boyfriend. He is, in spite of himself, all right. No, Chris says. It's Vulcan. What trouble is he going to get into on Vulcan? She demands, bored. Jim is out, because it's Friday night. She was going to go out. She was going to drag him out. But apparently that's not going to happen, because he's a moron. Have you met Jim? He demands. And look, Spock would be fine. That would be fine. It's not Vulcan, and it's not Spock, and it's not you. Obviously, she snorts, and then shifts, looking up at him. He looks down, hands hovering, uncomfortable. He doesn't like when she does this, puts her head in his lap, laying on the couch like they're a couple. It's not that, actually. Not that he doesn't like it, she means. He does. He just doesn't like that he likes it, and doesn't like that she won't pretend to be bothered by whatever stupid Terran version of propriety he has in his head. Spock's parents are... Chris starts, and then stops again, weighing the words carefully. They're good people. Good parents. I owe Ambassador Sarek for pulling the strings that got us custody of Jim. I just don't think that... Jim is good right now. He sounds frustrated, the thwarted rage he gets in his voice when he's talking about Jim. He's so protective of every little hint of progress in Jim, has sat in meetings at school and argued himself to distraction. He's so terrified that he'll see the boy who didn't know how to navigate anything without Spock. Which is fair. Jim had been. It had been really rough. He had been untethered, had flinched and gone quiet, and then been abruptly angry, striking out at everything. He had done everything he could think of to make sure they were watching, and then hurled abuse at them for watching. There were days when Chris had only barely scraped by, had sobbed into her shoulder, and she had tried to comfort him. She didn't know how to say that it was fine, that he wasn't hurting himself, and every time this happened, Chris was proving he wasn't Frank. "I made it," she said. "I made it, and so will he." She doesn't blame Chris for wanting to protect him from this. Dr. Grayson is too clever not to see exactly how wrapped up in Jim her son was. But that knife cut both ways, and Jim is out on a Friday night, but he'll come home by curfew and call Spock. "He is," she says now. "He's good, and he needs this." The playing field is even now, or it's more even than it was. Jim isn't helpless, hiding in Spock's shadow, because he doesn't want anyone to see him. He's not that boy. He's something new, something better, and they need to see if they still fit together, the way she needs to make sure she and Chris still align when she goes off for a short tour. "I'm taking him to Vulcan," she says. "It's for a month, not the end of the world." "You don't know that," he mutters, and she wonders if he knows his hand is in her hair. She wonders if he's ever going to admit he wants her. "What's not the end of the world?" Jim asks, tossing his keys on the counter and making a face at them. "Are you guys, like, together or what?" "We're going to Vulcan, end of next week," she says, and watches the way he shifts. He tenses like he's waiting for the punchline, trying so hard to be calm, nonchalant, and failing spectacularly, the way only a 16-year-old can. "Yeah?" he asks Chris, who tugs her hair, petty and spiteful. "Yeah, for a month," Chris relents, and she smiles at the ceiling. At least Vulcan won't be boring.